amendment changing the process for filling board vacancies. And, Mr. Manager, I would just ask, if at all possible, I would like to see that come back on a agenda during 2006, so in the next couple of weeks, if we can work that into our schedule. We'll take that issue up at that time, hopefully at a point where all seven members of the board can be present for the discussion. We don't ordinarily have citizen comment on our work session nights, but I do want to recognize one person who came here to talk just briefly. Ellen Perry, if you would come up to the microphone.
Thanks, Mark. I wanted to thank the Board of Aldermen and the town of Carrboro for putting in an automatic button for people with disabilities. And I think it would be a nice gesture to have a door opening ceremony.
All right.
Thank you.
I think I'll get together with Sharman and we'll try to put something together early next week in connection with that suggestion. Thanks, Al. With that, Mr. Manager, agenda item number one, presentation by Owasso regarding recent purchase of land.
Okay. I think Laura Sandvik, which is one of our Carver appointees to the Owasso board, is here to provide information about Owasso's recent purchase of 74 acres of the former Ray family property located adjacent to the University Lake in Morgan Creek. Owasso acquired the property to help protect the University Lake drinking water supply, but also recognizes its natural scenic beauty and possible uses for passive or low-impact recreational activities. Ms. Sandvik will present an overview of the property and possible partnership arrangements among Carrboro, Orange County, and Owasso. And Ms. Sandvik is at the podium with a PowerPoint presentation.
Good evening, and thank you for having me here tonight. I'll introduce myself again, Laura Sandvik, and I'm chairing the subcommittee for this property. And I'm also here tonight with Ed Kerwin, the director of Owasso, Matt Clark, who is the chair of the board, and Ed Holland, who is the director of planning for Owasso, and they're here to help with any questions you all may have at the end. And with that, I'll start the presentation. Owasso purchased the Way family property to help protect the University Lake watershed. We recognize the property's economic value as well as its natural and scenic value. The purpose of our presentation here tonight is to provide information and discuss the possibility of sharing this resource with the community. As you already know, the property is located directly across University Lake, and it consists of two tracts with a total area of 74 acres that is separated by Old Greensboro Highway near its junction with Jones Ferry Road. It is immediately adjacent to UNC University Lake property to its east and Stony Brook subdivision to its north. The topography of the site is characterized by its relatively flat upland meadows, and which are dissected by three steeply sloping ravines. All three of these ravines contain permanent springs that drain directly into University Lake. These upland areas are flat, well-drained, and generally well-suited for development. There is more than 100 feet of elevation difference between University Lakes and these uplands. And just for your orientation, here is Jones Ferry Road, Old Greensboro Highway. And in the middle, you can see the vacant house and outbuildings on the property, the pasture areas, and down along the bottom is UNC's University Lake property. These are a few of the recent pictures of the property. This is taken from the Jones Ferry Road Causeway, looking upstream toward the Morgan Creek. And the first 100 feet or so is actually owned by UNC. Here's a picture of some of the upland pasture area, and it's grazed by 12 to 15 cattle that are owned by Mr. Toy Cheek, and he's been using this property for some years, and we're currently working with him and the Orange County Soil and Water Conservation District staff to find a way to keep the cattle on the property while we maintain water quality. Here's one of Mr. Cheek's handsome heifers. This is a shot of part of one of the pasture areas. And these next few pictures were taken upstream of University Lake, along Morgan Creek, facing upstream, and the Owassa property is on the left-hand side of the creek. And it is really a beautiful piece of property. And there are plant life here that's very rare for the area, which is wonderful. And this shot here is looking in the opposite direction, back down Morgan Creek towards University Lake. And the Owassa property is on the right-hand side of the stream. We recognize two main values in this property. The first and foremost is its water supply protection. Secondly, its natural beauty and the rare flora that's found on the property and its potential for public appreciation and use. This property was quite expensive at nearly $30,000 per acre. We have been trying to recover some of those costs through a grant with the Clean Water Management Trust Fund. And today we had verbal confirmation that we've been awarded around $1.2 million from the trust fund, which is wonderful. And we're also exploring ways to recover additional costs while still retaining the water quality protection that this property can afford. So how should we use this property? These are some of the options that we have, which all protect water quality. One possibility would be to resell the property with protective easements in place. We estimate that approximately 30% of the property could be developed. However, having this beautiful property developed is our least likely choice, far from our first. We'd very much like to consider opportunities for low-impact public access, perhaps a hiking trail along the stream or wetlands boardwalk or perhaps a deck of some sort on the water, near the water. However, Owassa is not in the recreation business. We have neither the staff nor the mandate to develop and operate such facilities, so we would be needing a partner. We would like to know if there is any local interest in the future of this property. Past experience would lead us to believe that Orange County would consider a partnership role with Owassa if Carrboro were to be involved. Although this property is not specifically identified, a low-impact greenway or walking trail does seem to be consistent with Carrboro's Vision 2020 policies and the town's Recreation and Parks Master Plan. And this is just an excerpt from the Vision 2020 policies that refers to Carrboro's dedication to preserving open space and greenways. And this is a portion of a map from the Recreation and Parks Master Plan. And the green line in the red circle indicates a proposed trail. And the Ray family property is just on the other side of the lake. So, what are our next steps? We certainly do not expect any decisions tonight from you all. We certainly appreciate the time it takes to make those choices, but we wanted the opportunity of introducing this property to you all. And seeing the property firsthand is a wonderful experience, and so we would like to invite you all to visit the site and would gladly arrange a tour sometime early in December at your convenience. And thank you for your time, and we'll take any questions that you all have.
I think that's a really beautiful piece of property and with all the property around the lake. I'm not quite sure what you're asking us for. Are you asking us for money?
Well, we were thinking our greatest desire would be that this land does not get developed. And we are not in the business of maintaining that much property. And so we would love to see it as a park or have some public access to it. And That's just our greatest vision, but with that we need some public support from you all or Orange County.
We would really need to know, like exactly what it is
you all are asking, are you asking us to take over the maintenance, and what would that cost? Are you asking us to help defer what you've already spent on it, or, you know, in order to make those kinds of decisions, you know, we need that kind of pragmatic, and I need that kind of pragmatic information.
Surely. This is just a first view, glimpse of it, and we'd love to just discuss all the possibilities at hand, and if anyone else would like to make any comments, welcome to.
Well, I think it's a lovely piece of property. I agree with Alderman Guest, but I think sort of the three things that I would like to know is, if you wanted to use it for recreation, are we going to have to be the owner, fee simple absolute, with easement, conservation easements? Do you want us to play a part in operating it, but Owassa continues to own it? Whether or not you are going to make the same presentation to the Orange County commissioners and get their feedback. My inclination, given my review and knowledge of our capital improvements plan, you know, unless we as a town start playing the education lottery, monies for recreation that we are considering for property we've already purchased has already been at least committed in some way, shape, or form. And so we'd have to have all the numbers to be sure that we could really afford it. I mean, and I'm, you know, at this point in time, we have to construct and operate a new fire station, and we have owned the Martin Luther King property now for at least 3.5 years, and we have not moved on the development, not because we don't want to, but again, we have a limited amount of funds to do so. I know the county commissioners, and at least three of them are going to probably send me an email and say, but they may have more funds than we do if you're thinking of having a partner. Certainly, we would love to see that property as a park and to be connected to our greenway system. But on the other hand, there are some financial considerations that we have to take into account before we make any type of commitment of that nature.
Alex.
I'm not disagreeing with anything that Joel or Jackie have said thus far. And again, this is just a first blush in looking at it. Perhaps what I'm wondering is if it might be worthwhile to look through the Parks and Rec Master Plan and elements that are called for, particularly elements that might otherwise require capital expenditures that perhaps might be satisfied in some respects by working in a partnership or administrative, in an administrative fashion with Owassa, as, of course, the owner of the property. I don't know what the history is or what the issues are, what issues are involved in these sort of interjurisdictional cooperative arrangements. And obviously, there would be a significant timing issue in, you know, as we move forward over the years in our CIP and in acquiring properties to fulfill the needs in our Parks and Rec Master Plan, whether there may be some opportunities afforded here, perhaps, to avoid some capital expenditures that might otherwise be required to fulfill some of those requirements or goals. So I think it might be worth, from that perspective, it would certainly be worth exploring some sort of cooperative or opportunities for cooperation, I should say, because I think, as Joel and Jackie both expressed, we certainly don't want to put ourselves into the position of either making a commitment or giving the impression that we're able to move forward with something that we clearly haven't considered as part of what we've already got on the books. That's just sort of a notion about how we may wish to investigate some possibilities.
Brandy.
A long time ago, I canoed that up that property. It's spectacular. It's beautiful. It's just breathtaking. And I have a very solid commitment to greenways, but I also know that the bottom line, as Jackie and Joel, and you know, as they pointed out, you know, the dollar figure is, well, if it was daunting to Owosso, you can imagine for Carrboro. I think Alex is right. There's things to explore, and I would offer up amongst the things that Alex mentioned, maybe we look into the possibility of Land's Legacy and Land for Tomorrow partnerships with the county. Land's Legacy is quite well respected and recognized, and that might be an avenue to explore.
I can't believe these words are tumbling out of my mouth, but the idea of private ownership with a public easement isn't completely a no-go for me. I think it would depend on who bought it. For instance, if a retreat center or a something along those lines, a retreat center, an environmental think tank, some entity that may not be a residential entity, and yet would keep that farm feel, that's I don't know who would do it, but that's another kind of stretch possibility.
Well, I think that there have been a couple of good suggestions here, and I think if I followed the comments that maybe what we need to do is refer this proposal to our staff for some feedback from the staff about how this property might fit in with our Recreation and Parks Master Plan, and how this opportunity might stack up against other, basically other alternatives, which is sort of my main question about it. That we've got a lot of different recreational needs, and unfortunately, they effectively compete for the same set of limited dollars. So I would like to, think about this in the context of what are the other possibilities, and how does this compare? And ask staff to give us some feedback on those questions. And I don't know if I missed some others that were asked here, but
Dan. Yeah, one other thought that occurs to me, and I guess this would be back to you all in terms of your decision making, is that it might be an appropriate location for some sort of agricultural use. We'd want something organic, and whether it would be a sale for that use or a rental, but that that could potentially be a win-win in terms of a low impact use in terms of Owosso's goals and meeting some of the financial goals as well.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Great. Thank you all very much for your time.
Thank you. Thanks, Laura.
Do we need to have a motion on
Mac? Mac, did you want to speak, or you're kind of?
I'm here, I'll say a couple of words.
Is that all right,
Laura? Thank you, Laura.
Yes, first of all, may I express my appreciation for all your comments tonight. I think they'll be very helpful to us in how we should move forward. As you can see, we really have a very open mind at the moment. I would just like to say that, of course, from Owosso's point of view, looking at this on a very narrow basis, that we are very, very specifically restricted to providing water and wastewater treatment services. We can't get into the recreation business and so on, and that to some extent will inhibit how we can be involved in the management of this property for recreational uses. And that is why we feel that talking to you is the appropriate way to go. I would point out on the financial side, as Laura has mentioned, we are pleased that the Clean Water Management Trust Fund is already picking up approximately 50% of the cost of this property. And I would like to hope that in the future, that if Carrboro were to step forward, that Orange County would also be prepared to be partners in this, So the net cost to Carver, even if Carver were to accept some share of that, might be very, very much lower than the $2.3 million that the property cost. And I think that should be a factor in your consideration. We would very much like to work with you, and if you would like to nominate people to work with us, or how you would like to us to talk to you, we look forward to hearing from you.
Thank you, Mike. If we could trouble you, you all were kind enough to share your comprehensive annual financial report with us, and Alderman Brown had one question on it.
I just had one question on page 17, and I read page 16. I noticed that there was a net decrease of $16 million from current and other assets. And I'm just curious, do you expect another hit like that due to capital project expenditures for the 2007 year?
I believe this would be from the wastewater treatment plant investment, would it not, Ed? I must confess. Yes. I'm afraid I don't remember the report very much at the moment. Thank you.
Okay. Did you just email Stephen? He'll email all of us. Okay. That was just my only question, just in terms of, you know, there'll be issues of cash flow if they continue to hit
Surely.
Like that. That's my only concern.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you.
And Ed. All right. Mr. Manager, agenda item 2, presentation on the capital improvements plan.
I would encourage the Owosso folks to stick around because I think this might be informative for you. This is the presentation of the capital improvements plan. The purpose of this item is to provide the Board of Aldermen with an opportunity to review and potentially adopt the fiscal year 2007-2008 to 2012-2013 capital improvement plan with any pertinent suggestions on the established resolution. The recommended CIP document is a plan that enables staff and the board to plan for a vibrant community and meet the most critical needs over the next 6 years while protecting the town's positive fiscal position. And I'm going to relocate for a moment. Thank you, Sarah. Good evening, folks. This may be the more sobering part of the agenda for tonight. I would like to thank a couple of folks, particularly Bing Rennick and Sandy Sabota, who did the lion's part of the work on putting the CIP together, and also the CIP committee that's listed in the document. And I think we have most of our department heads here tonight to assist in responding to whatever questions you all might have. I'll be very quick with this because many of you have seen this before. This just lays out the fact that the CIP really is a planning tool. Just a reminder, it's not a budget. It helps inform the budget and prepare us to look ahead over the next 6 years and beyond, but it in itself does not appropriate a single dollar. It does help us prioritize projects. It helps us to look at how we do business. We use a ranking system with our capital improvement program committee to look at all the various projects that are submitted by the departments. It also gives us an opportunity to look ahead and have lead time for project planning, to look at land acquisition, design, and so forth. It also helps us look at how we take care of what we already have, which you'll see in the CIP is a very important piece of the CIP. It also helps us to look at matching our capital needs with our estimated revenue stream over the next 6 years. And we use this document to work with the credit rating agencies to at least maintain and hopefully to improve our credit rating and to maintain our fiscal health by making sure that we have strong budgetary and capital planning. I think it's always important to look back at some of the accomplishments of the town and for this board. One of the big ones is the Adam Track land purchase. We just heard the presentation from Owosso, but the board made a pretty significant commitment to 20-some acres of open space in cooperation with Orange County. That was a huge sum of money for the town to take on. That was a 50-50 deal with Orange County, and 50% for us is a is a lot bigger piece than 50% for the county. Looking at some other rec and parks areas, we have focused a lot on maintaining what we currently have. You can look at playground equipment that we put in place at Baldwin Park, at Anderson Park, lighting replacement, court resurfacings, and as Joel mentioned, the purchase several years ago of the Martin Luther King Jr. Park and the preliminary design work that's been done for that. We are in the process of purchasing a records management system for the police department, and we continue with our biennial street resurfacing. Work that's underway, as you all know, you just had a report recently, is our sidewalk bond program, nearing the completion of the Roberson Street bike path, continuing again with street resurfacing, and we just took bids on playground equipment for Simpson Street. Just to show you a few pictures of what we've been doing. This is some of the playground equipment at Anderson Park, Baldwin Park, the Anderson Court resurfacing project, the Brewers Park resurfacing project, the Wilson Park lighting project, part of our sidewalk program, that's in process. Some of these we borrowed from George. You've seen these before. This is a completed section on Jones Ferry Road of the sidewalk project. This is a portion of the Roberson Street bike path, again, that's nearing completion. This is a section of Quail Roost before. This is the after. Snow plow and truck for Public Works. Our automated refuse truck. And last but not least, our most recent and one of our larger capital equipment purchases is our new fire pumper. And I know the folks in the fire department are very proud of this particular piece of equipment, and it's already been used a good bit. And I guess a couple of weeks it's been on the street. As I mentioned early on, we pay a lot of attention to maintaining what we already have. And if you look at the yellow up at the top left, you'll see that about 30% of this proposed capital improvements program is committed to the maintenance of facilities and vehicles, because we believe it's very important we take care of what we have before we get too far astray in venturing into new projects. Also, I'll point out, as we've done before, about 80% of the capital improvements program financing would be debt financing, and the bulk of that installment purchasing, the smaller portion, is from general obligation bonds for the sidewalk and greenway improvements. And about 4.4%, or about $1.4 million, is estimated to be from grant funding. Some of the changes, you'll see that the CIP is about almost $6 million less than the current CIP, and that's primarily kind of an accounting thing. In the past, we had shown the state share of some road improvements that never passed through our budget in the CIP, so it really unfairly inflated our CIP. So we've removed those items from the state that simply never passed through. These are items that we would actually pay to the state. There are some projects, as you all know, that we put the money out up front and we get reimbursed for, but these are those that we actually would pay the match to the state. Some of the other changes, I just mentioned, as you all know, this is really a picture of a point in time of our capital needs, and there's several things in process that we're continuing to refine cost. One of the big ones is our sidewalk program, and you all know we've promised to come back to you on December 5th with updated estimates, which would include a sidewalk along Rogers Road as a part of Phase 1B of the sidewalk program. And again, we hope to get that to you on December the 5th. Our greenway figures that we've used for the sidewalk bond project for Bowling Creek and Morgan Creek, those numbers are several years old, and we really need to refine those costs to make sure that that we hold back enough money out of the bond funds to make sure that we have the match for our share for those projects. Fire substation, that's, you know, a huge project in the capital improvements program. As you all know, we've engaged the services of an architect who's begun preliminary work. We very shortly should be setting up a public charrette process where the community will have an opportunity to come in and share comments about the sketches and give us ideas about both the facility and the site and how it might best be designed and developed. From that process, the numbers that you see in the CIP may change. These are based on some preliminary architectural numbers from a year or so ago, but with more detailed design, these numbers likely will change. Parking lot C's have been in the CIP for a number of years. The RTS report, again, emphasized the need to really take a comprehensive look at our parking situation downtown. Weaver Street reconstruction, which has again been in the capital improvements program for a long time. You'll see in here the cost estimates have gone up considerably. We really need to do more work on that and look at it in terms of the downtown traffic circulation study to see if we want to do widening and those kind of things, because the current estimate does not include any purchase right-of-way and so forth, and that's a very tight space to work in within the existing right-of-way. Yes?
Have we made a decision to widen Weaver Street?
No, we haven't. That was one of the items that was discussed in the circulation study. No.
Yeah, and we most likely... Okay, so
not suggesting you will or you won't.
So we're not jumping the gun on that.
No, ma'am. And again, the cost estimate in here makes the assumption that we'll work within the existing right-of-way.
And it also, I mean, if you just look at it, it's like, okay, I'm sorry.
So,
just wanted to make sure people were clear on
that.
We have not made that decision.
We're not making a suggestion one way or the other, except that was one of the issues that was discussed as a part of the circulation study. And then the Martin Luther King Jr. Neighborhood Park and Road connectivity decision could have an impact on cost, and I would ask, we've got the next agenda item specifically for that, so I would ask that perhaps we save any discussion for that project for the next agenda item. The CIP also reviews active projects that are currently budgeted and estimates budgets for future cost through the six-year life of the CIP and beyond. The CIP also anticipates that we'll continue issuing bond anticipation notes for the sidewalk and greenway improvements up to a maximum of the $4.6 million that was authorized by the voters in 2003. That obviously can be less depending on the decisions made by the Board of Aldermen. There are a couple of changes that are suggested in the timing of projects in this CIP compared to the current CIP. The biggest one is the project implementation for the Martin Luther King Jr. Park is recommended to be delayed until fiscal year 2010-2011, and that would follow the construction and the operational implementation of the new fire station and the issuance of the bonds for sidewalks and greenways. To try to speed up the construction of the Martin Luther King Jr. Park, I can stand here and tell you almost certainly guarantees a property tax increase. I'm not going to stand here and tell you if it doesn't get moved forward that that couldn't still happen, but I can just about take you to the bank and say there's no way, because when you look at the cost of the new fire station, the debt service that we've just started paying on the Adams Tract, the debt service that we are and will be paying on the sidewalk bonds, those three things really limit our flexibility to do any significant shifting in the CIP unless you want to create a bubble situation or a spike in one year, which really would make it difficult to maintain our current tax rate or something reasonably close to that. I think it's also important, as I've mentioned earlier, that we really concentrate on taking care of the things that we already have. And again, about 30% of the CIP is focused, again, on taking care of what we have before we build other things to be responsible for. I mentioned the parking lots. They're also pushed out a year. As you all know, I think, there's never been a lot of work on that. That's been kind of a number put out there saying we need to do something with downtown parking, but there's never been a lot of work on that, no design and really no actual locations for that. So that requires some work, and we felt like it was appropriate to push that out. The public works facility is out in fiscal year 12-13 and beyond, planned for funding, but no funding really identified for that. It is a facility that we really need to be thinking seriously about. It's a very important facility because one of the things that really gets back to taking care of what we already have. We have inadequate facilities to service our vehicles and equipment. We have a number of pieces of expensive equipment that we don't have under shelter, and a new facility would help with all of that. But we also recognize that that's about a $9 million project, and we got to push it out in order to stay within our means. Looking forward, here's a list of things that you've seen every year since I've been here, of things that are also important projects that are not in the CIP, the building that we're in. There are lots of things that would be nice to do. Some of the things eventually we're going to have to do. An outdoor swimming pool has been very high on all the surveys that we've seen over the past years from folks interested in recreation. Greenways beyond the Bowling Creek and the Morgan Creek greenway projects that were a part of the 2003 bond referendum are not in here. A gymnasium, the Roberson Street improvements to try to put into place the widths and so forth and the wide sidewalks and the profile that the board adopted some years ago, and then some other local road improvements. And I think you can see, and I don't want to get off on the Iwasa project, but if you look at the six-year CIP, you'll see the only thing really in the Recreation and Parks Master Plan that's even in this six-year program is the Martin Luther King Jr. Park. Right. And we're strongly suggesting that be pushed out a couple of years. A little bit about the CIP's impact on our budget, on fiscal condition and debt. This is not anything new. We want to try to make sure that debt is proportionate in size and growth to our tax base. It should never be used to balance the operating budget. We should make sure that it doesn't have an excessive burden on our operating expenditures by capital expenditures that we put in place. If we greatly increase operating expenditures, that's something we try not to do. And we also want to make sure that our debt isn't so high as to jeopardize our credit ratings, because if we do that, then it costs more to borrow money when we need to borrow money. As the board also knows, we are constantly reviewing ourselves against our peers to make sure of where we are from a debt standpoint. I won't go through all these, but I think you'll see in terms of our outstanding principal as a percentage of assessed valuation, our outstanding principal or debt per capita, and our debt service as a percentage of the operating budget, all within this six-year CIP time frame. All of those stay within the average range as identified by the rating agencies and by the local government commission that oversees our financial business. And I'm very happy, to say that we meet those ratios established by the local government commission, as well as what we have in our own fiscal policy. And I think it's a credit to the board for, first of all, for adopting those policies, and second, for living with them. We just sent you out something last week, I guess, that said that the North Carolina Municipal Council had increased our credit rating, and that was in large part due to the development of and the adherence to our capital and debt policies and our fund balance policies. Had the board not done that, we could have seen the rating stay the same or perhaps even a decrease. And again, while the debt ratios over the six-year life of the CIP do increase somewhat, they still stay within that average. We don't come close to approaching the high range for any of those factors. Probably of more interest to the community, because these ratios don't mean much to most folks, but I think the tax rate means something to everybody.
something more to some than others. But we also try to make sure that over the life of the CIP that we're very aware of what these projects, along with expected increases in our operating budget, will do to the tax rate. And again, as you all know, our ability to provide revenues to offset the cost of capital items and operating items is very limited beyond our property tax base. In conclusion, this $32 million CIP continues to move us forward, making sure that our plan really, we get some things done. Not as much as we'd like and not as quickly as we'd like, but just some of the pictures that I've shown you and some of the projects we've got underway, I think the town's done a lot with a fairly limited amount of money. And again, we tried to design this version of the capital improvements program to minimize the potential impact or ballooning or spiking effect on our tax burden. And I think we all know that some of these projects in the CIP might not make it in the time frame laid out in here. Some might not make it for some period of time beyond that. And as you all know, every project in here is subject to review during the annual budget process. So just because something is reflected in this plan and might show a particular impact on the tax rate, that doesn't mean when I deliver a budget to you all in May that's what will happen. We weigh lots of factors, and one of the big ones is what it does to the tax rate. And then finally, fiscal constraints make it difficult to add any new projects to the CIP. I think if you've looked at the document, I think it's pretty evident. And this, again, is just the capital piece. This doesn't take into account the operating piece of the budget. And as you all know, we've had significant increases in health insurance, significant fuel cost increases, and yet 3 out of the last 4 years we've been able to maintain the same tax rate. And that's because of fiscal constraint and paying attention to reality. So that's it. Thank you.
Well, you know, first of all, I'd like to thank the staff for really great work. Every year, and I'm very, very happy to say this, every year the capital improvements budget improves, and I'm just really happy about that because it gives us the ability to at least think as a board and as a community about what we think is important and what we are willing to pay for. I think it also clearly indicates, once again, that we need to be, when thinking about tax revenue, look at how we're getting that tax revenue. And are we at a point where, I know we're going to talk about the moratorium for the North, but, and I'll certainly speak during that period of time, but really continually keep on understand that if we want items for the town, it's got to come from somewhere. And the question still is going to remain, is it going to be so weighted on the residential taxpayer? And that's a really important thought. And, you know, while this is getting a little ahead of myself, when we talk about being on the retreat planning committee, which I guess this is my plug to say I'd like to be on the retreat planning committee, jumping ahead of everybody.
How about it?
you know, it's really important for us to look at that because things are going to continually cost more, and one of our responsibilities as stewards and servants as we sit on the board is to, one, take care of the things that we have to take care of, and two, look into the future about what we like to leave other people when we are gone. And I have some questions about the Martin Luther King park plan, but I'll reserve those until later. And the only other thing is, I guess there's no real way to move the Wilson Park bathroom facility up in terms of and the only reason I say that is because it's a very popular park with a demographic of when you're there and the parents of small children the issue of did you go to the bathroom before you left the house is always never a question that you can ask. So if there's a way that we could move it up or phase some of it in, so that part of it works, and that would be great because it really is a park that a lot of people use demographically.
It's actually in the CIP proposed for next budget year. So
okay.
Unless we found $154,000 somewhere this year, which I don't know where that would be. We really want to try to do that. And that's one of those things that is one of those items that I think is a maintenance issue that
right.
we need to take care of what we've got. And so that's a very important project that we wanted to do this year. And we're going to try very hard to make that recommendation that it be in the budget for next year.
I'm done.
Dan.
Thanks, Steve. Very good report. Several questions. On the sidewalks, do I understand correctly that the $1 million figure that's in the report for next year, that's going to be clarified on the 5th?
That's right. Yeah, the
projects. Okay.
That particular item is kind of a placeholder based on what we've done in the past, understanding that would be refined December the 5th.
Okay. And I think you just answered my second question, which is the bump in the parks maintenance for 07-08, that's for the Wilson Park.
Yes, sir.
Bathroom.
That's the big project for next
okay.
year.
Then, let's see, where am I on this? On the MLK Park, and I mean, this is less critical a question if we're putting it out this far, but I noticed that the planning, architecture, engineering line is about 10% of the total project cost.
Mm-hmm.
And is that typical, that couple $100,000?
It is.
For that
you
project?
Can figure anywhere between about 8 to 12% for those costs.
Okay. And on the lease purchase schedule, how many patrol vehicles do we have? I think she left.
Carolyn.
Or she's
here.
Sir.
She's
we've got 42
uh-huh.
42 for those of you watching at home.
Okay, so we're replacing about, I don't know, 12% a year then, I guess. Okay, that sounds very right. Now, the related question has to do with the data terminals.
Mm-hmm.
So we have coming up, expenditures, $60,000, $70,000, $80,000 a year on those. What's the price? How many terminals are those? Or what's the price per unit? Do we know?
Six a year at a price of $8,500. That includes an RF modem to
the state's network. Okay. And when we buy new vehicles in the future, do those already have those terminals in them? Is that like part of the purchase price in the future?
The MDTs are being lumped in with the purchase of a new car. Is that?
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks, Steve.
Mm-hmm. Jackie.
I had some very specific questions, and I'm not sure if this is the appropriate time to bring them up. And if it's not, then I'll wait until the end of the meeting. Under projects that are ongoing, there was the Roberson Street bike path.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are some real issues and concerns there surrounding landscaping and promises that were made and expectations from the neighborhood and all of that. I don't know if this is the appropriate time to bring that up or whether we should wait till later. And then also the money going towards the opening of the proposed opening of the road in that neighborhood. But so I'm not... The financial issues, they're also very specific. I'm willing to put them off.
The second item is scheduled to be on the agenda next week.
Okay.
The first item, I would just say, we've been working very closely with the Homeowners Association to develop a plan for landscaping, and there was never any landscaping plan by the town for that project, and that project predates both George and myself, but Paul Helwig, our landscape superintendent, has met
on more than one occasion with the Homeowners Association folks to develop a plan for landscaping.
See, I was under the assumption, I don't know why.
That's been happening in the last, like, 2 weeks,
right.
Basically.
Yeah.
So it's a change.
Yeah, because I was under the assumption that we were going to landscape that. And I almost feel like within the past month I've said to somebody, well, aren't we going to landscape it? Oh, yeah, but we've got to work with the neighbors to figure out how that's going to look.
Well, let me suggest this. I feel confident that residents of the neighborhood are going to be here next week at our meeting, and I think that might be I feel confident. And I think that might be the time, it's certainly the time to discuss the Rand Road connection issues for decision about that. But I think we also need to, I think it might make sense to get a little further into, maybe what we could do is ask the staff to be prepared to give us a report for next week about what decisions have been made about the landscaping over there, so we can, since the interested parties will be here at the same time.
That's why I asked. Thanks.
You know, I would just remiss if I didn't add, as you said, I'm sure we're going to hear probably a little about that issue and a lot about another issue.
Right.
But in conversations that I've recently had with folks in the neighborhood, the response that I've received has been very positive in terms of their interaction with Public Works and in dealing with these landscaping issues. And I haven't heard that they are I've heard that they're pretty pleased with the response they've gotten recently.
Well, that's good to hear. I have one question on the CIP, and I don't want to get into the Martin Luther King Park issues right now, but I just want to understand the numbers in the behind the proposed change that you've included here.
What page are you on?
I'm on page 3.3.
Thank you.
Which is the summary table of the impact of the CIP on debt ratios.
Okay.
And if I understand it, the bulk of the cost of the MLK Park development will be, under this proposed plan, would be $1.3 million, and it would be in fiscal year 10-11.
Mm-hmm.
And it had been at one point, or I guess up to now, we had had it 2 years earlier in 2008-09. And here's the point that I want to. I think I'm reading this right, and you correct me if I'm wrong. But I think that by moving the $1.3 million out 2 years further, part of what you've done is ensured that our total outstanding debt stays fairly level basis, that we under this plan we would have about $12.8 million in various types of debt of long-term debts and in 08, and that number would decrease slightly even with the park by the time you get to fiscal year 10-11 to 12 million from 12.8 million down to 12 million and that basically part of how you can do that is, again, correct me if I'm reading this wrong, but it looks like our outstanding principal on the current outstanding principal line, there's an actual decrease over that 2 year period of about $1.6 million in debt.
Correct.
So we're planning to pay down $1.6 million in debts over the 2 year
We're trying to time it so that we have a drop in the existing outstanding debt. So that we incur new debt, it'll bring it back up, but it won't spike it. And that's also reflected in page 3.4, which shows the potential impact on tax rate. And it's a similar thing. You can see what would happen if we shifted it back to where it is now. You would see a bigger spike. So,
but the key, and I guess the key, without, you know, and I'm not sure exactly what I think about
about the delay or proposed delay quite yet, but I just wanted to make sure I understood this point that it's sort of moving the $1.3 million dollars out 2 years means that there's, you know, that we will actually owe $1.6 million less at that point, and so logically, therefore, we're in a better position to afford to borrow a new $1.3
million. There'll be more capacity, and, you know, that debt's fixed. It is what it is, and to shift the part back just adds on to what's already there and, again, creates the potential for a real spike.
Right. Okay. All right. Thanks for the clarity about that. Can I suggest that there's included here a resolution that would potentially accept this and approve this as our CIP? Well, can I just suggest that we make it through the next agenda item and then consider that resolution,
right,
since the CIP sort of presupposes the two-year delay? So let's just discuss the park real quick, and then we'll come back to that.
That's fine.
All right.
Yeah.
So,
okay. That's fine.
Mr. Manager, agenda item 3, review of alternative design for Martin Luther King Jr. Park.
Okay. During a March 14, 2006 work session to discuss the adopted capital improvements program for the last six fiscal year period, the board had requested an opportunity to discuss the master plan and alternative design for the Martin Luther King Jr. Park. We put some background information together for you in the packet, and a resolution accepting the report is also in the packet. And Dale McKeel, our transportation planner, is at the podium to walk you all through an overview of the history of the park and more specifically some history about the connector road portion of the park. Dale?
Good evening. Our screen got shifted somehow. The as Steve just mentioned, on March 14th, there were several requests dealing with the Martin Luther King Park, and I'll try to go through these and provide the information that was requested. Now, the first request had to do with review of alternative designs, specifically alternative designs that included a parking lot. And in order to sort of provide a chronology of how things happened in regard to the design of the park, and I want to provide a very brief overview. The decision to purchase the park occurred in November of 99. A designer was selected in July of 2000. And in October of 2000, the park design committee, which had been appointed by the time and was working with the designer Site Solutions, came to the board and asked the board to decide whether the road should be built as part of the park development. In January of 2001, the board adopted a resolution specifying that the park should include a connecting road. We've included that resolution in your agenda packet.
It was not unanimous.
Well, we know that. It's a matter of public record.
At that point, Sungate prepared several alternative designs for the connecting road. They did not prepare any designs that included just parking lots based on the resolution that the board had adopted. And the road design subcommittee selected a park design which maximized the usable area in the park, and that was to sort of keep the road over on the eastern edge of the park property. There was some delay during this time period in the park design process, but in August of 2003, the park design committee was reactivated to resolve the road issue and continue with design of the park. Site Solutions at this point prepared several alternative concept plans for the park for a subcommittee of the board that was reviewing these. And one of these did show parking lots rather than a street connection. And this is that particular design. And there was one parking lot shown here adjacent to Hillsborough Road and another up in this area adjacent to Tripp Farm Road. The that concept plan that I just showed you, as well as several others, were then reviewed by the board subcommittee that I mentioned previously. In November of 2003, the board subcommittee made a recommendation to the board recommending a road access option to the board. There was a memo in your packet that came from the subcommittee, and there was a memo from Mayor Nelson. And at that time, the board adopted a resolution approving the road alignment that was recommended by the subcommittee. And this is the plan that was included in the board agenda in November of 2003 when that action was taken. And as you can see, it has been somewhat refined from what was shown previously. The in order to try to reduce the amount of impervious surface, all the parking was shown adjacent to the roadway. There have been some other designs, which I think did include some parking sort of off of the roadway. So that was one of the refinements that occurred during that period. Just to continue the chronology of actions, in June of 2004, the board approved the park design as recommended by a design committee, and that design did include the connector road. And then in October of 2004, the board adopted the park master plan, which was in your packet, and that park master plan did include the connector road, and this is the park master plan that was adopted. There's also a question about expenditures for the park, and there's several expenditures listed here. I will point out, I guess, the purchase price of the park was about half of that purchase price was covered by in-lieu fees, and the other part was through installment financing, which is still a part of our annual debt service. There was a question about advancing the park by dropping the road. When this question was asked back in March, the response from town manager was that the CIP seeks to balance the tax impact, and advancing the project must be considered in the context of all the other CIP projects. I think that's consistent with what I just heard tonight also. And did want to note, that, as already been noted, that the project has been moved back in the proposed CIP update. There was a question about whether it be easier or cheaper to build a parking lot versus a road. And I guess I'm not really prepared to answer that question completely. The design that was done before showed fewer parking spaces than are provided along the connector road. Those parking lots probably don't meet, the parking lots that you saw probably do not meet our design standards as far as the shading and some of the other requirements. What I am comfortable saying is that design process, construction standards, stormwater quantity, and quality standards are the same for a parking lot or a road. And there's some additional detail on this point in the staff report. One thing I just wanted to spend some time talking about is sort of our land use ordinance provisions and where we are as far as our land use ordinance. And I will refer back to the, or I ask you to refer back also to that memo that Mayor Nelson wrote in 2003, because he provided some sort of historical detail on how we got where we are with our land use ordinance and some of the requirements that are in there. But the connectivity requirements in the ordinance were strengthened in the mid-1990s and again in 2002. I think it's fair to say that connectivity requirements have increased the cost and complexity of many developments. We have some developments in town where there are very expensive bridges and other infrastructure that is necessary because of the connectivity requirements, but that's a policy decision that the town has made, that connectivity is an important component of the town's development, and so those items have been included. There's a list in your staff reports of several developments that just showing developments that have complied with our connectivity requirements. We've also had projects that have been denied for failure to comply. There was one project that was denied by the Board of Adjustment and ended up being appealed to Superior Court, and the town did prevail in that particular situation. And finally, since a zoning permit would be required for the park, this would sort of put the town staff in an awkward position if the decision were made not to incorporate a connector road into the park design. I would point out that there are, you really can't see this, but you can't see the writing at the top of the screen. One of the recommendations from the November 2003 resolution referenced including traffic calming devices into the design of the park, and would suggest that there are some things that could be done in the design of the park that might reduce the impact on some of the surrounding neighborhoods. One idea, and I think I may have even floated this previously to the board subcommittee, would be to put some sort of a traffic circle near the connection to Tripp Farm Road. I'm sure a lot of you think that I think of circles in all sorts of ways, and that's probably true. But I think there could be some advantages to putting something like this in for a couple of reasons. One, if vehicles are coming in and there are no parking spaces here, they can circle back around and try to find a space on the other side of the connector road. One of the drawbacks, I think, of having just two parking lots, one over here and one here, is that if there is no parking in this lot, a vehicle would have to go all the way around and go through the neighborhood anyway to try to find parking on the other side. Anyway, having some way to turn around here would just allow folks to enter and exit the park without necessarily having to go down Tripp Farm Road. If there was some sort of a special event occurring in the park, it might be possible to, you know, close off that and folks come in and turn around and exit without having to go out Tripp Farm. Just an idea. I think there are some design ideas that could be incorporated into the park that might lessen the impact. I think Anita Jones McNair and Trish McGuire also here. They're a lot more familiar with a lot of this information, particularly the park design, than I am. But I'll be glad to try and answer any questions.
Jackie.
Not yet. Thanks.
Alex.
Just as sort of this is a generalized question, and I know that you've answered it somewhat, that there are still some unknowns in terms of the cost of substituting a parking lot scenario with the combination connector and parking. But in any information that you have or anyone else on staff has, one of the key interests that's been expressed is the idea that the substitution of an alternative design incorporating parking lots and removing the connector parking combination would allow us to move the project forward. Is there any indication that that would in fact be so, based on what you know so far?
Let me take one stab at that, and we don't know what the difference in the cost would be. My guess is it would be less with parking compared to the connector road. We haven't really spent any money, you know, doing any engineering work with that for a couple reasons. One, we didn't have money appropriated, and secondly, what's on there does comply with the board's adopted policy and complies with the Northern Study Area plan that was also adopted by Chapel Hill and Orange County. And so there would be a number of things that would need to happen, I think, to remove that road. But let's say there were, let's say you took the $400,000 estimate totally out of the picture. That still, in my mind, creates a funding problem to keep it where it is in the current CIP or move it up, because we've still got, you know, over a million dollars in cost that would have to be absorbed somehow. And even phasing it, still, you're talking about a not insignificant amount of money.
And we began, this again goes to the timing issue. We began design in 2000, roughly. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So design was actually completed and adopted in 04. Is that correct?
Yes.
So that's a four-year design time horizon. So anticipating a significant redesign of the site, one could anticipate a significant amount of time elapsing between beginning of redesign and completion, wouldn't we?
I think part of that would depend on the process that the board chose. If you look at the history, a lot of it involved starts and stops and starts and stops, primarily over the road issue. And once that got, I think, like three different votes to continue with the road, then it moved fairly quickly through the approval phase.
Let me back up and rephrase that. What's the typical timeline between concept plan review and final approval for a zoning permit in our process? Without any of this other stuff.
Marty.
Trish or Marty?
Depends on who's on the board.
Also depends on how much.
Well, that's an administrative.
Well, this is a zoning permit, so it would be a.
What I'm doing is
stuff.
I know what
you're doing. Yeah, I'm removing, just for the sake of a best case scenario, all the other factors that are involved.
Just as a broad, you know, guess, anywhere from 6 months to a year for something like a park where there aren't many structures involved and not a much impervious surface compared to, say, a subdivision or commercial project. Maybe not quite as long. Maybe the stormwater engineering wouldn't be as complicated, but probably fair to stay still 6 months or so. The only thing you really are not held to is the time period involved in going to public hearing and seeing the advisory boards and things of that nature.
Right. Thanks. That's all I got for right now. Thanks, Mark.
Yeah,
a few things. First, I'm wondering where this idea that this change would allow the project to happen more quickly came from. I don't remember that from when we discussed it in the spring. So
I think the question was asked at the retreat, is my recollection.
There was a retreat. I can't remember the timing, but the question was definitely asked about if the road weren't there, could the project speed up?
Oh, okay. Because I don't see that as, especially under the current circumstances, I don't see that as a relevant or a key part of the question. Also, in terms of the replanning that might be involved, I don't see how that would impact. That would not be a redesign of the whole park. That would be the section where the road goes through and the potential parking lots at each end, presumably, and most of the uses in the other 70%, I would think, would stay much as they are. Is that right, Dale? I know you can't answer that specifically.
That might be a better question for someone from our Parks and Rec department than for me.
We do have a plan that doesn't have a road in it. That plan exists.
Good evening. I want to just kind of mention it might affect it or it might not. Based on where the parking lots would be, you would probably put various amenities, closer or not as close. So it just would depend on, you know, what you wanted to look at. I would think that it would change it at least slightly, because I think the one of the parking lots closer to the Hillsborough roadside, you would have to move the open field, the spray ground, that would have to move. So it would probably be some changes.
Okay, thanks. I saw three different plans, one of which had the parking lots, one that had the road, and one that did not have the road.
Okay. So. Okay, then my next point, just as a perspective, is, you know, in terms of looking at this, that I think, you know, the plan that Dale had up there a few minutes ago with the lots showed, I think, was 18 spaces on the Fair Oaks side. And I think we don't really need many spaces on that side, because there's a lot of on-street parking in the neighborhood, and most people coming in from that end, I would expect, would be walking or biking anyway, just watching movement through the neighborhood. But then more, you know, there's a lot of issue in here, or question here, of how we deal with this idea of connectivity, which is going to come up again next week in terms of the, what's the name of that little road?
Rand Road, right.
And I think, you know, I met with the neighbors down there, and I think my sense of the issues is very similar between the two. Because I think, to perhaps oversimplify a bit, there are three kinds of connectivity. There's the kind where there's a clear benefit to it, there's the kind where there's a not-so-clear benefit to it, and there's a kind where there's real problems with it. And I think that the connection through the Roberson Place neighborhood, as the neighbors have explained it to me very clearly and as my sense of the conditions in that neighborhood, that there's some real danger in putting that connection through. You know, I don't want to get into that tonight. That's for next week, but that's my opinion at this juncture. And then putting a connector road through a park, you know, part of the reason, if we go back to the memo that Dale was referring to us to and some of the other, is that, you know, people in our neighborhood, my neighborhood, Randy's neighborhood, need emergency vehicles to get to us a little more quickly. But if we're going to put the kind of traffic calming we're talking about going through the park, that's not going to be a factor. And the fact is that people are going to use it with or without traffic calming. They're going to try to use it as a cut-through, and it's going to place children in danger. And as someone who drives in and out of there every day, well, almost every day, that it's not necessary. The distance for anyone who's back there, who's going that direction between Trip Farm Road and Parkview, is insignificant. And so I feel pretty strongly about wanting to move forward on rethinking this question. And it's kind of surprising to me. I mean, I haven't talked to Diana about this, and I know several of you know her opinion, that, you know, that living back there also, that she would have looked at it differently, because I just don't see where the neighborhood needs that connection. And if we don't need it, then, you know, the UPS guy doesn't need it. And anyway, I'll stop there.
Joel.
Okay.
I know I'm going to be in the minority of you. I voted for the connection. I'm still supportive of the connection. And there are really three reasons, and I'm not going to be long, and I don't mind if I'm outvoted, because that happens in life, but we will bear the responsibility of it in the future. First things first. I have always opposed calling it a Hillsborough Road Park, because everybody's taxes pay for it. So I'm glad they call it the Martin Luther King Park. Primarily, we still in Carrboro have a deficit of the amount of recreation facilities we need for a town our size that denotes a healthy community. I still agree with the former mayor's memorandum about the connector road. And again, I'll probably be outvoted. But if we look at it, not just about neighborhood, because Carrboro is not just about neighborhoods, it's about Carrboro. And I know people disagree on the issue of what connectivity means. But we continue to plan as if it's going to be used by only people that bike there. And the truth of the matter is that if we're going to have a multi-purpose field out there, then there are going to be a lot of people other than the people that live in and around that neighborhood using it. And I can surely tell you that if we remove the road, then we're going to have larger parking because some people are going to need to park somewhere. And not all of your neighbors are going to want people parking in the street. I'm just going to say it like that. The number of people that, you know, there are people that walk to Wilson Park, but the number of people that drive to Wilson Park is, again, not everybody bikes to Wilson Park. Not everybody runs to Wilson Park. I use that as an example. Then the only other park that we have in Carrboro is Anderson Park, and everybody has to drive there because if you want to walk on 54, get ready, you're going to get hit. I don't see how people bike on 54 without the idea that they've paid up their insurance and somebody needs the money. So, you know, clearly I know I'm in the minority on this, and I'm not going to belabor the point. But when we have developers come to us and say, well, you know, you didn't put a connector road, and as I'm sitting here today, I'm willing to put $50 on it, that a number of them will come up and say that, a number. And I want y'all to get together and give me that $50.
The CIP, it's great that it came right before this discussion because in the CIP, where it discusses Martin Luther King Park under Define the Problem, it defines the problem as a neighborhood park should be located in the Hillsborough Road area to accommodate the surrounding neighborhoods. Now, you know, I've listened to this discussion for, you know, since the park was cited because I live not far from there. I know that the distance between where the proposed road is to around from Hillsborough Road 2 pathway is within a quarter of a mile. So, you know, it begs the question, why would you create literally an asphalt pathway, an asphalt jungle in a park? This kind of reminds me of the road, Cleland Road, road that runs through Rainbow, the Rainbow Soccer Fields, which is extremely dangerous. And I'm always in favor of connectivity, but in this case I would say, what kind of connectivity do we want? I see that we can put, you know, trail there. I see that we can put bikeway there. And I think that that's what would serve the neighborhoods that would be using the park. I don't think that applying a trail or a bikeway to the words connectivity is incorrect. I think sometimes that we over-apply what we mean by connectivity. And in this case, creating, you know, a roadway within a quarter of, less than a quarter of a mile to, you know, to transect a park does not seem like an appropriate practice, not in terms of how we identify the use of our park space and not in terms of how we look at the safety issues in a park.
Alex and then Jackie.
Yeah. Just a couple of questions followed up by some comments. My memory has failed me because this has gone on for so long. How many acres is the site?
9.5.
And the facilities that we're using are essentially a full-size multi-purpose field, another field, the spray ground, surrounded by, in any case, about 10.5 acres. Well, the lexicon that's used is as a neighborhood park. I would suggest that it's fair to say that a facility of this size with the variety of facilities on site is functionally a community park and functionally likely to be used by the community at large. I think a lot of the reasoning that went into this design had not necessarily so much to do with some sort of slave adherence to connectivity per se as, don't give me funny looks, I don't do that to you, per se as much as it did to look at what would provide effective community access. I think frankly, if it were a smaller site with fewer points of access, particularly to Hillsborough, for example, that it would be less of a community attractor. And frankly, if it were smaller and, again, had a smaller variety of activities and were likely to attract fewer people, I think I'd be persuaded by your argument. I think I really would. In this case, however, I haven't seen any real argument that would tell me that we would achieve a substantial savings in impervious surface. Some have argued yes, some have argued no. The best way you could do that is to remove the number of parking spaces. Well, regardless of whether you use this configuration or a configuration utilizing parking lots, the point of resistance remains, which is that, all right, if it's going to be a reasonably accessible park, if it's going to be attractive, it's going to attract X number of people, and that if you wind up reducing the number of parking spaces, and I'm operating on a general assumption that overall, regardless of which scenario you choose, I haven't been convinced that you're going to achieve a substantial decrease in impervious surface without reducing the spaces per se. So let's say the spaces are what's on the table. Well, you do that, and people are likely to park on neighborhood streets. Some neighborhoods would find that perfectly acceptable. I remember back in your neck of the woods, Mark, back long before your time, but Jackie remembers this, that there were enormous problems with people parking on those streets to go to other stuff. And a really extensive, and I don't even remember what they were. I think it had to do with festivals and things associated with Carborough Elementary. But there was a very long and detailed process that was gone through to reconfigure the whole system in that neighborhood to stop it, because it was not only driving people crazy and inconveniencing them, but they thought that that was a hazard as well. So in that case, I think that you're likely to have that spillover effect if you reduce the number of spaces regardless, and so that argument just, at least for me, doesn't get you very far. The other philosophical discussions about access and connectivity, I mean, we all have our points of view. But again, I guess I'd have to wind up by suggesting that while it is referred to in the documentation as a neighborhood park, and obviously we want the neighborhoods to get the full enjoyment out of it, so the fact of the matter is it's going to be a community facility, the community is going to use it, and we need to provide reasonable access for the entire community.
I just had a question. How big is Wilson Park? About 10 acres. So it's about the same size. And I know Wilson Park's not a neighborhood park, because I go to Wilson Park, and I do not live around the surrounding area. And I confess, I do not walk, run, or bike to that park.
I drive. I had a birthday party at that park. It's probably the reason why I'm asking about the bathroom, because I had to take three small children to the little porta potty. But, you know, and again, I would ask the board, even if you remove the road, not to call it a neighborhood park. And I think it is, of course, I don't want you to move the road, but I just think it is inconsistent with the idea of all Carrboro, because that's what brings about the divisions. Well, it's my park. So if somebody, and I'm just going to bring it, I'm going to bring it home. Somebody that doesn't look like me is sitting up in the park. Maybe they shouldn't be in there because they don't live in the neighborhood. And I don't want that. I do not want that dynamic in that park, no matter what you put up there.
So I want to just kind of respond to a couple points, because, first of all, I agree with Joel and Alex completely that this park is going to be a draw for people around the town. And I also, I'm not at all suggesting that we reduce parking, or certainly not that we have less than adequate parking. I did suggest that we might need less than has been thought of before on the Fair Oaks side, but I could also be wrong on that. You know, there are ways of studying that need. But, yes, I think we need adequate parking for the people who are going to come there, absolutely. So I want to get that issue away so that we can focus on the issue of cars driving through the park. And, you know, I also have driven often to Wilson Park, but, you know, the people who live on not Hannah Street, Water Street, they don't drive there. You know, they don't go to a little parking lot on the side. And obviously the Fair Oaks neighborhood extends farther, so that's not a great analogy. But, you know, I think we can provide for the people who want to drive there. And I just think the car drive through the park is a separate question, and I just don't see the benefit to it.
Okay. If I could just jump in for a second, I want to, if y'all don't mind, ask a question. In this plan that was adopted, there is a stub out to the southeast. What's over that way right now?
There's another road that stubs that is off of
Blue Ridge.
Yeah, Webb Drive. There's a property between Webb Drive and the park property. So, but that is shown as a connection to that existing stub out, which is off of Blue Ridge.
Now, I just want to throw out there that, and if I recall, the properties that are to the, you know, basically south and east here of the park are properties. There are a couple of houses there, I think, and they were built maybe about 50 years ago. And they're it's considerably less dense, densely developed than the zoning would seem to allow, so that it's the type of property that at some point we might anticipate. That if the families that own it now sell it, that it may be redeveloped at some point.
Right. Yeah, I think that's a fair assumption.
Just for FYI, unless you didn't see them, a couple of those lots just sold. They're zoned R7.5.
Okay. I didn't know that. That's pertinent. And I'm just thinking out loud here, one thing that is an important question is how if we were to eliminate from our plan this connector, just how what implications that might hold for how those other properties might be later built out, and so I just want to throw that thought out there. I don't know what conclusion that particular issue ought to draw us toward, because we don't quite have the right maps in front of us to consider that issue. But I've got to say, you know, personally about this, that I'm a little bit, you know, my gut reaction basically is that I'm troubled by the possibility, by the arrangement here, in terms of the safety, particularly with angle parking, which, you know, involves backing out basically into the right of way, and I don't know. It looks to me like a situation where, you know, you could have kid darting out between parked cars, that type of thing, to cross over to the parent's car on the other side of the parking lot. And of course, there's an element to that, that the extent to which that is a problem in any parking lot design. But where we have a through road going through the middle of it, it seems like it adds to the potential for problems.
I would note that this parking layout is not that different from Anderson Park.
Yeah.
The parking layout's not different,
I can see there's a lot more space. I mean, you really have to get out in the middle of the. I mean, it's a lot. I'm gonna help you out, even though I disagree.
No,
I believe in, you know, putting all the facts out there. The
from left to right on Anderson Park, another park which I frequent, is much wider than you know. This would be. Mm-hmm. I mean, you are literally in the middle of the street when you come out. I mean, I understand because it is angled, but it's much wider.
The other thing is, though, that the only reason that you pull into the driveway for Anderson Park is to go to the park.
Right.
Where in this configuration, that wouldn't necessarily be the case, because you might be just traveling between the neighborhood and the Hillsborough Road in this configuration. But you can't sort of get anywhere by driving into Anderson Park is a another factor to consider. The other thing that's sort of interesting, I'm glad you raised this thought about a roundabout. If we did happen to stay with the same general plan that we have right now, it's interesting that the angle parking is mostly set up to accommodate people who would be coming not from Hillsborough Road but from Tripp Farm Road.
Right.
It's sort of an odd feature of it that I don't think any of us particularly thought about when we last reviewed this this plan. But that is, I mean, I'm with you that, you know, when I go to this park, I'm going to be driving up Hillsborough Road and coming in that way, and I am going to go to this park whether I live in that neighborhood or not, you know. So,
I mean,
anyway, so it seems like there's some issues to be considered, even if we were to stay with this particular plan. And I guess let me ask this question. I've heard where the aldermen are on this issue. John's not here tonight, but as best I understand it, I think he's basically supportive of sticking with the plan that we've adopted in the past. I don't think I'm going out on a limb by saying that. You know, at what point do we make a decision about whether to do something with that or with this issue or not? I'm not sure that I came prepared, and I'm not sure that I quite have. I mean, I hate to suggest another discussion of this because I think it's not going to be a more fun topic in the future than it is tonight. but on the other hand,
I've been surprisingly silent on this. But go ahead and then.
No, all I was going to say was, it can go to another date certain to discuss it. You know, but. The only other thing I was going to say was we won't have the money to start working on it till 10 or 11. And
we've got some time.
We've got some time, and we can, you know, massage it. You know, things change, and
you know, it's up to y'all.
Well, and I'll just point out that sometimes things change and then sometimes they change back, so you never know, especially the further you push out the plan. But anyway.
Mark, I just want to clarify a term because I was on the Parks Master Plan Committee with Anita, and I raised the very same question about the term neighborhood park. And the term neighborhood park and the term community park, they have very specific guidelines that they represent. So, you know, I didn't mean for this to mean that it belongs to, you know, the James Street folks or the people who are in Quail Roost, blah, 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 blah. It is, there is a national standard, and am I correct, Anita? And I want the public to understand that the term neighborhood park or the term community park, they are based on guidelines. Sorry.
I think that's worth pointing out, but I take to heart the point that Joel raised about that. And, you know, we've seen not so long ago the kind of attitude she's talking about. But anyway.
I intend either tonight or probably later on to put forth a motion that we remove Connector Road through the park for the following reasons, and they're the reasons that I have been pretty consistent about for the past 7 years. One, the road will knock out some significant trees. Two, and most importantly, a road running through a play area is not safe no matter what you do. You get little goober heads out there running around, and they're not listening when you tell them to come back. You know, they're going to run for that ball or for their friend or for whatever, and that's just really scary when that road will be used, not just to come to the park, but to cut through the park. And three, let's see, there's the roads. Oh, and three, I have never been to a meeting, and I've been to several, probably four or five community meetings on this. I've never been to a community meeting where the community was saying, build us a park with a road through it. I just never heard it from the very first day we all met under the shed back in there in the early spring of, I guess it was 99. And every other community-based meeting we've had, people are not saying that they want a road through it. In fact, it's just the opposite. One of the first things people will say is, don't put a road through that park. The Recreation and Parks Commission did not want a road through that park back in the early days. So there is not public support. There's not only a lack of public support for a connector road in the park, there's strong public sentiment against a road through the park. And that coupled with the endangerment of the kids and with the knocking down of trees, it just doesn't make sense to me, and it hasn't made sense to me for 7 or 8 years. So probably not tonight, but I do intend to put forth a motion to have this removed.
In case you wondered how I felt about it.
I was in suspense. Steve, did you want
to? I just wanted to mention the procedural matter that if you looked at the staff report, attachment B5, if you all make the decision to remove the road from the park, there are really two things that need to happen. One would be, well, two things in addition to removing it from this plan. One would be to amend the land use ordinance, either to amend or delete the street interconnectivity provisions, because to delete it would conflict with our current land use ordinance, and our zoning administrator could not issue a zoning permit. The second thing is this connector road is a part of the Northern Study Area plan, which is a part of the Joint Land Use Planning Area plan, which would, we believe, would require action by Chapel Hill and Orange County as well. So it's not just simply a matter of removing this line from the plan.
Well, let me ask you a question about that, because part of what I was trying to obliquely get at earlier is, and this is kind of similar to with the county park up north of Homestead Road.
Twin Creek.
The connector road, you know, on the policy, on our connector roads policy, it's sort of schematically drawn onto the map. Mm-hmm.
And it isn't meant to say that it's going to follow exactly this particular route, but it's going to connect from point A to point B, and it's going to go, generally speaking, here. And I follow you that this connection is embodied in a couple different planning documents, it sounds like, to make a connection from Tripp Farm Road to Hillsborough Road. But but it's a schematic, you know, it's a line on a map that's just meant to show, generally speaking, a connection there. And one of the problems I had with how we were at one point approaching the situation with the Lake Hogan Farms Road, whatever it is called, Hogan Farm Road connector going up there, was that for some reason everybody was drawing that line on public land, when in fact there was a good bit of private land immediately adjacent. So let me throw out this thought. This is why I say it would be interesting to know a little bit more about the property that's to the south here. But is it possible that we could develop the park in a way that would further the stub of Tripp Farm Road into private property, but put some more of the road building burden onto the people who will benefit most from that road building activity, i.e., some future private developer who may come in with a subdivision application at some point on the property to the south, rather than asking the Carborough taxpayers to carry all of that burden. And I don't know whether that, because if we're not looking at what that next property is and so forth, I have no idea what the topography is like or whatever.
So you're referring to the property just to the south, where that you were talking about.
We're right there.
In other words, Tripp Farm Road could continue, for example, could continue in and come and stub out where that stub out is, and there could be a parking lot out over on Hillsborough Road, and those two not necessarily connected by taxpayer money.
I'm gonna get up. Are you talking about? Let me up. You're talking about having it come down here and then stop. Is that right?
Schematically, yes.
Okay.
something like that.
Okay.
Where we're not, you know, we're building
and moving
some
road south.
Right, and moving the road south. You know, would be an approach that would keep some more consistency with our policy, and would get would move away somewhat from having at least partly move away from having the road coming through the parking lot, and might reduce, I'm not going to go out on a limb and say for sure it would, but it might reduce Carborough taxpayers' obligation, or, you know, we might be asking less of Carborough taxpayers by doing something like that. But again, that's why I say I'm not quite ready to make a decision here, because without knowing more about what's to the south there, I don't know whether that idea really makes sense.
I'm pretty sure that the area Joel just indicated, and I don't know, maybe Trish or Dale knows this more specifically, is actually the backyards of the people coming off Blue Ridge Road there. And the section closer to Hillsborough Street is where you go down a long driveway, and there's that one brick house there. And that's, I think, what you were referring to earlier,
right,
where there could be some redevelopment, and that is all accessed off Hillsborough Road now, and presumably would continue to be. So I guess the thing that I'm not clear about, Mark, is, I mean, I agree that if there's a connection all the way through on that side, that would answer some of the safety concerns, you know, and maybe that would be sufficient. But I'm still not hearing, you know, what the clear benefit putting a connector in there is in any case.
Well, let me go one step. I'm not sure that I can answer that question right now, but let me go one step further and say that, you know, it's also possible that a configuration might involve, not necessarily on our, might involve one 90-degree bend in the road on our property and another 90-degree bend in the road on the next property owner's property, in such a way that, you know, sort of like
at Autumn Drive, Stratford and Kate's Farm don't yeah. actually line up. There's a dog leg there, which kind
yeah.
of
yeah. Yeah, I know what you're
settles
talking.
Everyone down a little bit coming through there, or hopefully it does. But yeah. I just throw that out there as a possibility for another issue to look at.
Well, I'm willing to look at it. I'll give you that.
I will not make my motion tonight, then. So we can have this discussion again.
But I think we need information.
That's
and kind of put the preliminary master plan sort of on a bigger, I don't know if bigger, I'm not really good with map. Maybe I need to go to a map class or something. But, you know, so you can see it in context, if right. that makes any sense.
You want a bigger area. You want this.
Yes, with a little more detail. Yeah, right. I like detail.
I'd be interested. I'm sorry to jump in. I would be interested in seeing what the adjoining plats are and the lot lines and the relative size of the lots, the depth of the lots. I mean, in some respects, that's kind of an interesting notion. And you know, here's kind of where I'm arguing against my usual philosophical bent, which is. Mm. You know, if these are relatively small lots and small landowners, then, you know, I mean, there's a significant impact then on asking them to provide the
right.
infrastructure to serve
right.
the park.
Right.
So the zoning of it is
particularly
important.
When what has been discussed over
yeah.
however many years has involved, in whatever scenario you choose, direct access from Hillsboro and Tripp Farm and then this connector. I mean, you know, you can knock 70 feet off of somebody's lot and right-of-way, or 120, depending on acquisition.
No, I don't mean you. I mean all of us. Let's be
right.
careful
yeah.
how we're...
Right. right. I mean, but my point being that I'm just raising a couple of flags mm-hmm. before we all jump on another
right.
idea.
Right.
And I think it's an intriguing notion in some ways. My other concern is that the on-site parking has to be provided one way or the other,
point.
So we're still going to have to pay to grade it, to design it, to put in the stormwater management, mm-hmm. yada, yada. We also have to consider what the impacts would be in terms of driveway access, Hillsboro being an NCDOT street. If we created another intersection and then try to get a driveway permit from DOT 50 feet down the road,
right.
I just got a funny idea that Hunsinger ain't going to go for that.
Well, those are all, I think, important.
Anyway, I sound like this. Yeah, I'm not trying to knock down the idea. Those are just some issues that I see popping up.
Right. I think, you know, the one point I would make about the difference in, you know, there's paved and then there's a road. And our rule in Carrboro is that you've got to if you build a road, you've got to build it to the North Carolina Department of Transportation standards for road construction, and that means not just asphalt on top, but you know so much gravel underneath and a certain amount of grading and the hardness of the
right.
tree, you know, and there's a lot of requirements there that when you're building a parking lot for when you're building a parking lot, are not necessarily you don't build it quite as industrial strength as DOT does.
Right, except to the extent that since we go back and forth.
No, go ahead.
Except to the extent that you know, with the notion of all right, let's just push over the road and make somebody else build it. Well, then they would have to build it to NCDOT standards, with the understanding that this would be a traffic generator. And so I don't know what category that would kick it up
right.
to. In addition to whatever else it would have to be designed to serve.
Right.
So,
okay, well,
just a couple things to think
there's,
about.
I think
yeah.
there's plenty to think about there.
Mark, there's one more item that I'd like to ask for. If,
sure, related to this.
And that when, Steve, when you mentioned the procedural, is there some way that we can get a printout of what an amendment to what the steps procedurally would be if we were to look at amending the land use ordinance or to look at the joint planning area if we wanted to have that option?
Sure.
I just need like some schematic of what that is.
Yeah, we can do that.
Okay.
And I have one last thing, which is, you know, it's
It's frustrating to have to be looking at pushing this project out to 2 years further because it's, you know, obviously it's going to be a great no matter how we do the parking, I think it's going to be a great community amenity when it is built. But on the other hand, when you look at the numbers, it's you make a compelling case, Mr. Manager, about the challenges of our debt load. I wonder whether, and you spoke earlier to the notion of a phased plan, and you know, although that's possible, it doesn't do that much to solve the it doesn't go far enough to enable us to move it really in any significantly closer amount of time. But I wonder whether you know, this plan that we have before us includes a number of trails, and there is a kind of, I believe, I haven't been out there for about a year, but I believe there's a fairly informal kind of pedestrian connection that exists from Tripp Farm Road out to the bus stop on Hillsborough Road right now. I wonder whether...
No, there's not.
There's not. Yeah. I've walked it.
Yeah, that's okay. Extremely informal, walking through a field.
I walked it a year ago. See if you can find my footprints. okay, well, anyway, well, then even more so, my point, which is I wonder whether we could scare up a very modest amount of money by comparison with the $1.3 million budget for the total package to create a walking trail or two that would go through the property so that the public can have, you know, at least a little bit of a little bit more beneficial use of the property than there is right now, and it could even be given that we're in a state of flux about exactly how we're going to do the park. Could even be, in my mind, you know, something that's surfaced in Chapel Hill gravel or some relatively temporary surface, but that would allow for some access. So I would like to ask the staff to investigate whether there's a way that we could begin to give people a little bit of benefit.
I want to amend that a little bit.
Okay.
I like just an estimate of if, you know, where the multi-purpose field is, if you just sort of...
Go out there and grade that sucker.
Yeah. I mean, and the reason because is the amount of, you know, I have an 8-year-old that has a fairly... good soccer ability, I'm proud to say. And maybe we picked up the wrong child because he has very unathletic parents. But we think he's ours. If there's a way to grade the field just for so people can play soccer. Because there are a lot of pickup soccer games. Like, for example, there's a pickup soccer game all the time in front of Lincoln Center. And I'm just thinking that if you have a team or a league that, I mean, all the soccer fields in Southern Orange County are used by all ages, adults and small children. Is, you know, what that estimate would, I just want an estimate. You know, I don't spend the town's money like a spendthrift. So I just would like just an estimate of what it would cost. And it doesn't have to be what people consider, you know, standard and everything, because when people are having a pickup game, they're not going to go out and measure and say we're not going to play on it because it's 5.2 inches too long or something like that, so or not wide enough. And I just would see, you know,
play field.
You know, just a, you know.
Flat grassy surface.
Yeah, flat grassy surface. Not even, you know, maintain that. Well, just maybe cut a little bit every now and then. Just what that would cost, both operation-wise and capital-wise, because you have to factor both in, I understand that. So.
Okay.
Okay.
So there's a basically two closely related requests,
right,
for a little bit more information from the staff on interim uses of the park site.
Yeah.
And then also we will have a discussion about whether maybe we'll have an agenda item at some point early next year. Does that sound wise?
Before 11, yeah.
What's that?
Before 2011.
before 2000, a discussion prior to 2011.
I'd like to suggest it be in 2010.
how to proceed with this connector road issue and whether maybe an alternate alignment is feasible or advisable.
Break.
Well, that cleared that up and put wrapped up in a nice tight little package, didn't it?
Okay, we're going to have a 6.3-minute break.
6.3. Demographic, we have to argue.
dog we took off yesterday. To all my friends that get AKC, you know, kennel, pedigree, I'm like, y'all should take her dog. She's been a great dog. I mean, great dog. That's what she did eat her hair from the bagel this morning. But I told her not to put it at the edge of the table. It's always a danger.
A bagel eating dog. Yeah. Charming. That's a cool dog.
Yeah, you know, a little
cream cheese. Those dogs are not in the bagels.
No, I mean, it was, he goes, I said, where's your bagel? And you know, the dog's like,
who me?
Who me? Like there's nobody else.
Look at his trap.
I don't think.
She'll be drinking.
Does it count for the rest of the sports?
Cafe.
Yeah. Competitive, right?
So I almost thought I was going to have a better week.
It's amazing.
It is.
I can't be there Saturday. I have to coach. Here's the plan.
Okay.
Let's do this. I gotta get out of here.
Well,
Let's go home.
We'll all be good. Do we? Can I? Okay, I'll ask as soon as we... All right, let's get started back up here. I personally am... I don't know how much longer I'm going to make it, but we need to... we've got a couple of issues that are really critical to discuss for tonight. Can I ask the board whether the board would be willing to... defer the discussion of legislative issues to another night as well, or yeah. Is that
if we don't talk about it tonight, I'm gonna fall out. I love that look.
Yeah.
Then here,
okay.
No, here. I'll just give you my list. Joel's list.
Okay, beautiful.
You save that.
I promise I will.
There you go.
I promise I will make Sarah save it. okay. So we'll come back to that. So we have remaining on our agenda at this point the discussion of the proposed moratorium in the Northeastern Study Area, and then we'll do the appointment of the Alderman Retreat Planning Committee, for which I already have three volunteers, so that probably will be short. Okay. Mr. Manager.
Were you going to go? Excuse me.
There was a motion for the CIP resolution. From Alex earlier.
Oh, yeah, as is, since there is no real moving on.
Second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, the matter passes unanimously. Mr. Manager, item four.
Okay. Item four is the discussion of the Planning Board recommendation for a development moratorium in the Northern Study Area. On October 3rd, you all received a proposal from the Planning Board and Advisory Board comments regarding a moratorium on rezonings, major subdivisions, and special and conditional use permit applications to be established in Carrboro's Northern Study Area. The Board referred the proposal to other advisory boards, neighboring governments, the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. A resolution that provides an opportunity to respond to the Planning Board's request has been prepared for the Board's use, and Trish McGuire, Planning Administrator, is at the podium. Trish.
I just have really just a few comments to make, since what we have done in follow-up is what the Board directed on this topic, and that is the Planning Board's recommendation was distributed to our neighboring jurisdictions, Orange County and Chapel Hill, as well as the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. We also submitted it to the New Horizons Task Force, and that committee has reviewed it. The Northern Transitionary Advisory Committee also reviewed the proposal again and adopted a resolution and in relation to the Planning Board's proposal, which is attached to your agenda packet. I know Alderman Haven O'Donnell and Coleman attended the meeting last night with the New Horizons Task Force and can update you on what took place there. The moratorium, if a moratorium was to go forward, is enacted as a temporary cessation of the land use ordinance, and as a result of that, we use the land use ordinance amendment process to put it into place. The recently adopted procedural requirements through the General Assembly do affect how a moratorium can be established, and so there are some additional procedural requirements that are spelled out there. And then there are provisions in the joint planning agreement as well that deal with development moratoria and would affect the time frame of any moratorium that would be established if the board decided to pursue that. And so specifically in that regard, if the board wanted to go forward, it would be necessary for a draft ordinance that detailed the need for a moratorium, what would be accomplished during the moratorium, the questions that would be asked, the answers that would be sort of what we were trying to scope out, a timeline, and so forth, and an area of impact would need to be specified in an ordinance, and a public hearing date set, the ordinance referred to Orange County and the Planning Board for review, and the moratorium could be under the joint planning agreement, could be enacted for 6 months initially and then could be extended following the amendment process again for another 6 months at a maximum under that agreement as it stands right now. Happy to try and answer any questions you have. Thank you.
Yeah, can we not, if we want to apply for the full year initially, is that allowed? Or
Yes, you can just go for 6 months. In fact, I mean, Is that what you mean?
Can you only go for 6 months
yes.
at a time?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
It can't be, initially it can't be more than 6 months.
Okay. Joel.
And I guess one of the questions I have, and so I'll just give y'all sort of a preview on my thoughts, don't people fall out, is one of the reasons that we can discuss the moratorium is to determine, is it just solely land use purposes? I guess, now, I know this sounds crazy, but I'm going to tell you, I'm just want to know how to frame it so we can have the necessary facts that it supports the action if we decide to do that. Part of my concern about a moratorium, and I'll tell folk I haven't made up my mind yet, so is that people get the instance that if we're going to have a moratorium, the expectation is that we are going to downsize or think about rezoning the property to some larger, I get it.
Larger lots, lower density.
Lesser use. And I would argue to all of you that the current plan about Southern Orange County should not be about downsize. That if we're going to have a plan and come up with a plan, it needs to reflect some of the needs that we feel is required. I mean, and I don't think the matrix has changed, but I have argued to all of you that we have enough R20. And we have a dearth of commercial. We have a dearth of 7.5, R7.5, R10. We have a dearth of those kinds of developments that encourages the use of mass transit and discourages the use of cars. You know, I guess I want to hear from other members of the board, but is it the expectation that if we go through the moratorium process, we're going to have a conversation, whatever that time is later on in the future, and we're going to talk about downsizing? Because people will get this expectation is
when you slow down growth, that you're going to, we're going to decrease the density. And I'll have to tell you, I'm pretty opposed to decreasing the density.
Jackie.
I could still be convinced otherwise, but I'm very strongly leaning towards not voting in favor of the moratorium. And that is because we, you know, spent years developing the small area plan. I think we should work towards finding ways to encourage the implementation of the small area plan. I think one of the problems is that there's not enough of what we wanted in that happening. And also, frankly, one reason I'm opposed to the moratorium is that the county is ready to move ahead with the plans for, I keep wanting to call it Twin Peaks, and it's not Twin Peaks.
Twin Creeks.
Twin Creeks.
It's like Twin Peaks.
Yeah. And I think that by our delaying that, we are going to cost the county a fair amount of money, which means causing, you know, costing ourselves a fair amount of money. I don't think it's fair to the county for us to put that on hold for 6 months or a year. So, and I'm just, I haven't heard strong enough reasons yet why we should enact a moratorium.
Alex, Mandy, Dan, me.
Just, I mean, really quickly, I would like to hear, since I have it, I don't have any documentation from what took place in the New Horizons Task Force discussion, so I think I'd like to hear that first.
Randy, Alex.
Yeah, but I have a couple of suggestions for how to proceed.
Okay, let's go to Randy and come back.
I was just going to submit the material that was given to us last evening to Dan and I. And the chair, Lydia Lavelle, shared the responses. There are, I think, about 8 to 10 emailed responses, and it wasn't the kind of item that was going to be voted on by the New Horizons Task Force. So what they did is they submitted their actual responses, so that it would be part of the documentation. They did not.
So there were like responses from individual members of the
individual task force? No, individuals who live in the newly incorporated areas gave responses. So it wasn't individuals who were on the New Horizons Task Force themselves, and they wanted that to be shared. So
okay, so this is communications that
it's
you just
communications,
came from
right? You have one, yeah.
Yeah.
Basically, the gist is that I think there are 9 of these emails, that all of which are supportive of the moratorium, most of them in fairly strong terms. And the task force itself did not
want to.
There was no motion or vote taken on this, but I feel comfortable reporting the sense of that group as also being supportive. And there were not any questions or concerns raised that I'm aware of, in terms of, you know, a concern about going forward with this at that level.
We also have a letter floating around. Actually, it hasn't floated this way. Can you pass it back down here with those photographs from Elena Kalamanis, who
there's also a letter from Friends of Bowling Creek in our packet.
Basically of the same general mindset. And I'll let you take a look at that, but I guess I wonder whether to what extent is that a response to concerns about what's happening at the way that the development is playing itself out at Windmore.
I think
the pictures that are included, for example, with Ms. Kalamanis' letter are all of Windmore, and you know, there are some interesting issues there.
Well, I think there are other properties in that vicinity that are of concern, that are, you know, still yet to be developed. And there's also the issue, and what we expressed to the task force was that one of the concerns expected to be addressed during the moratorium was a rethinking of the question of how and where to site commercial development in the study area, and that they, I believe the feeling was that that was an important goal in those, in the neighborhoods and among the task force.
The other group we were waiting to hear from and that we have heard from is the Northern Transition Area Committee.
Advisory Committee.
Yeah. Advisory Committee. And on page, beginning on page C3, we have a summation of their discussion as well as their approval for a recommendation. And they do not give a wholehearted support for a moratorium. In fact, it sounds like the general tenor is that they're against it, and then they end by saying if there is to be a moratorium, that they recommend that the Board of Aldermen have a short list of specific issues that could have specific answers. More importantly, there needs to be a specific process to evaluate the issues and determine the solution. For example, if the issue is a commercial site, to have 2-day, I don't know why it would need to be 2-day, but a workshop or a charrette with extensive public involvement. And so I think we need to look at their recommendations as well. I don't think that they are wholeheartedly. They're asking what the achievement would the moratorium would actually achieve. So I think that needs to be read in balance with the stuff coming from the New Horizons people, because those are all folks who live in the north and are affected by the moratorium.
Well, I think we have a queue going.
Well, I'm last.
Yeah. First of all, I thought that the Northern Transitionary Advisory Committee's comments were some of the most thoughtful that we received in the process. I think what we're trying to do here, whether to use a moratorium as a device or to do something else or not, is to get off the dime on the issue that was, I think it's 3 years now, or maybe it's 4 years ago, that was raised in the in our retreat, which was that if we were to, that we weren't achieving the degree of success in implementing the provisions of the small area plan and the other planning documents using what we have now. And then the next step was to take that hard swallow, if you will, and put the appropriate uses on the ground. And the hard part was going to be identifying those uses, where they ought to go, and set some goals for how we go about doing that, because all the goals that we've set so far, or were in the small area plan in any case, aren't well enumerated. They're well described in philosophical terms, but they don't set very many hard targets, and that's something we're missing. And so the use of the device of the moratorium is to try to buy us a little time, but not much, to actually formulate a process and do that. I still prefer the idea of using the moratorium as a device, both to provide us with, and I think it would push us from both ends, is to provide us with a cessation in activity and new permits coming in, avoid the land rush of permits, if you will, mm-hmm. while these decisions are made, but at the second time, give us a hard closing date by which we really need to try to finish up the work and make these decisions. I know that maybe Joel wants to go first, but I've got a sketch of how we may wish to proceed, just a few waypoints that might be helpful. Okay.
Sketch on.
Let me sketch. Let's assume either way whether we decide to use the moratorium or not as a device. I had a conversation with the planning board chair, and I think some other people had to try to clarify, kind of what they were interested in, and the recommendations of the Northern Transition Area Advisory Committee also, I think, informed this as well. So here are just a few elements. One, that what we do as a first sort of throw it out there is to charge the joint advisory boards, the Planning Board, TAB, Northern Transition Area Advisory Committee, New Horizons Task Force, appearing everybody involved.
Parks and Rec.
In joint session to discuss a process to address the following questions. And furthermore, in addition to these advisory boards, what I would like to pull in, and tell me if this is a little, I'd still like to do it, because I think that the geography that we're dealing with kind of demands it, is to identify interested parties in the Northern Transition Area and in organizations like neighborhood associations, in the churches as well, in the newest areas of town, to extend direct invitations to participate at the front end of this process. At any rate, those are just a couple of structural elements about, or those are a couple of ideas about who mm-hmm. who comes to the table to start putting this stuff together. Mm-hmm. Suggested elements that they hash out are, and some of this involves staff work, obviously, one, an inventory of the remaining land that has not been developed since the adoption of the small area plan. Basically, all that stuff that hadn't been permitted yet. Second, here's a big one. Set a benchmark or goal for a, and this is a number, for our residential, non-residential use split that we want to hit. Won't get into specific uses mm-hmm. just yet, mm-hmm. but look for a target number that people can agree on there. The one I got off the top of my head is that we want to try to hit 30% commercial or 30% non-residential.
Non-residential. Tax generated.
Das.
I wouldn't want to include the park or the school in that calculation.
Oh, yes. Right. No, I'm not talking about public facilities. No, okay. Non-residential, developed, revenue-generating uses. Identify those uses that are not on the ground or zoning that is not in place that we need to get to meet B. And then D, suggest a strategy to identify the tracks and uses. And this is where it's a little bit more mushy, but this is where they're going to have to kind of have some of this stuff out over and above that hard target number that I'm talking about to meet the expectations of the adopted planning strategies and goals included in the Vision 2020 document, the Northern Transition Area Small Area Plan, and those are the primary documents. And that's it. That's where we start.
One thing, Dan.
My turn?
Yeah.
All right. Okay. I'm just going to ask you a clarifying question before I say what I have to say. Were you suggesting that all members of these 8 or 9 advisory boards get together or just delegates from each of them?
I'm open to suggestions.
Okay. Because, 50 people trying to hash out a process in a room does not sound like a good way to go to me. But anyway...
James is jumping out of his chair, and I know we don't take comment on this, but since I referred to him,
we'll get to James.
But I want to get back to the question of a moratorium because I think Alex is getting at how we proceed during a moratorium or without one. I think there's a lot of merit to how he lays it out, but I think a moratorium is important for the reasons Mark alluded to, that we want to have time to answer these questions without a lot of pressure of development applications potentially coming in from what could be key properties in meeting what are our goals. Now, this idea of revisiting the Northern Study Plan has been going on for a long time, and I've listened to those discussions, and my sense of the board has been, we talked about the retreat and we agreed we want to do it. And what I heard was 3 things that we wanted to accomplish. One was to find a way to increase commercial and identify the potential sites for commercial. One is to increase housing diversity, and both of which I think get at what Joel is referring to with her the concern she started us off with, and the third is to address some key environmental provisions that might need to be updated as part of that plan. So, and I think part of what we need to do is, if we are going to have a moratorium, is be very specific in what the goals we're looking at, and that's what I've been hearing as where we need to go, and I support the moratorium on that basis and would like to go forward with it. I do have two questions for staff. One is a general question, one is a specific one. Do we have to use this map, or can we adjust the lines are of where the moratorium applies? I assume we can make adjustments.
I think as long as the purpose, there's a link between, what you make as your reasoning behind the moratorium.
But I assume we can't make adjustments specific to protect a specific property, as is the case, for example, the park site. Would that be correct?
I don't think you'd be taking specific site so much as you can have, it seems to me you can have classifications or exemptions. We've had moratoria before where the moratoria doesn't apply to all types of development.
Okay, so we could exempt park development.
Yeah. Or you could say it's a residential moratorium or something like that.
Okay. Because I do think, I don't know if we need to do this or not, but looking at this map, there's this whole big section of what is the, established and mostly developed southern part of the northern area, hold this up for the camera, down here, where I don't think the questions we're asking apply. And there may be some minor things that could go on there, but I think you could make a line on the south skirting the UNC property and then running along the edge of the properties that run off Homestead Road until you get back over to Old 86 and thereby exclude this whole lower section here that really is not germane, I don't think, to the questions we're asking. So that would be part of my suggestion in terms of how we proceed.
Basically cut from the UNC property over to Old 86 following the town line there.
Right.
And I don't know if we want to.
Because what was part of the northern transition area at one point is now highly developed.
Well, and I think, there's some good logic to what Dan's saying. I'll just point out that if we have this process, it's clear that we're not particularly interested in having the group spend its time on the largely built-out area to the south.
Right.
In that
no
area.
Point.
But anyway, I think Joel, you were next, not me.
Well, I would agree I'm supportive of Alex's process. And I guess this will sound kind of backwards. But, I'm going to be very upfront with people and the public and citizens. I am not interested in downsizing that entire area. I'm going to put it out there now. So people don't have the expectation of thinking we're having a moratorium to downsize the property. I'm not opposed to looking at the environmentally sensitive areas. But in doing so and protecting those, there's got to be a trade-off. There's got to be a trade-off. And this is the last, this area used to be farmland. It's not some pristine Great Smoky Mountain Park idea. It used to be farmland which people farmed. And now what you have is a generation of people who cannot, because of economic circumstances in America and the way what I call agribusiness is done, in some ways, the property is more valuable to the heirs of the people that farm that land to develop it as residential or commercial. And I have to say, after living here now for almost 20 years, I grow weary of people thinking that the house they sit on was pristine forest land. The house I sit on was farmland. The house that people live in on Winmar was farmland. Lake Hogan Farms was farmland, dairy farmland, and the economics changed. We live in an MSA of probably more than 1.5 million people. And, you know, I want people to understand, if I vote for a moratorium, it is not to downsize that property.
Can I add something to address that, like, right away?
Mm-hmm.
This is something we kicked around, and I just didn't put it in here, which is that a key element of the small area plan is to achieve a target minimum density of 2.1 units an acre, and that should be one of the targets that we set.
Okay, let's move along.
Well, let me say something about this. Alex, I like where you were headed, although I agree that having 50 people in the room to develop a process there comes a point where we need 50 people in the room. But anyway, but whatever.
The idea
that
was the
not
players
central.
That we need to draw in.
The interested
players
parties.
Are going to be represented with right
but,
now.
I actually think it might be helpful to take to go one step further, because what you've outlined there is sort of the subject matter rather than the process. And I think it's helpful to have the subject matter sort of laid out like that. But I think it might also, even if it's just sort of a straw man, as they say, it might be helpful if somebody would kind of draw up a concept of how we'll actually do this, whether it's that we're going to have a charrette or facilitated meetings or whatever it is, but just to throw it out there so that people have something a little more to react to, and I think if we're going to make a decision about about having a moratorium that we've got something, we've got a specific proposal about how we're going to get
right,
there.
Perhaps I wasn't clear enough, though, that what I was keying in on, though, was that the process is informed by the elements that you want to deal with, and that what I was suggesting is that we get these folks together to actually recommend a process for how we attack these particular ideas.
I see what you're saying.
But to let them know that these are the things that we want to attack, and that what we're not doing is rewriting the documents. What we're doing is developing mm-hmm. a functional implementation plan, or an implementation plan that is more functional than that we have been using thus far.
Right. We're getting more specific about the plan.
Right.
I could be wrong about this, but I think even so, it would be helpful to have the outlines of a plan thrown out to that group, or a process thrown out to that group, just for something for them to react to, so that they don't have to sort of brainstorm it up on the spot. And the attorney's going to point out that we have to have something along these lines in order to do a moratorium anyway.
Yes, as it says here, you have to have the ordinance that would establish the moratorium, which of course would also have to get approved by Orange County, requires a clear statement of the actions and the schedule for those actions proposed to be taken by the local government during the duration of the moratorium to address the problems or conditions leading to imposition of the moratorium. So you pretty much have to spell out, this is what we're going to do during this, now, under our agreement with Orange County, maximum 6-month moratorium that we can have, this is what's going to happen. And so that process and all that sort of stuff would have to be laid out in the moratorium ordinance itself.
Okay. So here's really what I wanted to say, the more fundamentally about this topic, is that I'm, at least right at the moment, feeling a bit more ambivalent about the question of whether we actually have a moratorium. But what I feel strongly about is that we need to do something along the lines of what Alex said. I mean, the moratorium is not the most important issue in this conversation. The most important issue in this conversation is going ahead and doing this process and making our plan for the northern area of town more specific, as Alex just put it. So, you know, I don't, Alex, well, the
James
staff,
and I
the
were
James,
making,
whoever, I want somebody yeah. to kind of
James and I were making weird up. Faces at each other, which were faces like, I'll do it, yeah, I'll do it, sure, you do it. So I guess that means that we're volunteering to go ahead and flesh this sketch proposal out.
That would be.
And would you like us to present it to the rest of us and then go
yeah.
ahead?
Yeah.
Yeah, and we won't necessarily, I'm not picturing that we would adopt it as sort of hard and fast, but just as a
tighter
well,
sketch than
I,
the
if,
one
I guess
we
we'll have to actually, at some level, adopt it kind of hard and fast if we actually do a moratorium. Yeah. But
it'll give us a platform to work.
We have a public hearing before we
yeah.
do it.
Correct.
Yeah, we do.
Which the public hearing for this could not be held, well, I mean, in our regular course of things, couldn't be before like January sometime.
Yes,
yeah, at the earliest.
We're only doing none during Christmas.
I mean, I guess I kind of a little bit apologize for the undeveloped nature of
this. Oh, no, that's okay.
But, you know, this is sort of sketched together based on information that folks have gotten literally over the last couple of days. So.
Well, and here's the other thing I would like to suggest is, and I guess, again, this sort of has to be the case based on what the attorney just said, but to me, you know, we should try to think of a way to make it a six-month process, you know,
damn
and not make it a year-long process. I guess we have to anyway if we're doing a moratorium. But really what I mean is regardless of whether we're doing a moratorium or not, I think we should try to have it be like a six-month process. Mm-hmm. You know, this doesn't have to take forever. And there are lots of issues that don't need to be rethought, as you're putting it.
Mark, I just want to add that there's a very small number of properties that really – are developable that are left out there. I mean, when you look at that map, the Ballantyne property, the Jones property, they would be out of the picture. The Manasseh Nump, the school property. So the real key is to focus on what properties are left and come up with a plan based on, you know, what's there and how can we get to that 30% by looking at what's there.
Well, I think that's you're right, and I guess the reason I feel a little I kind of go back and forth in my own mind about moratorium or no moratorium is, you know, for example, this moratorium would impact, for example, the university's property where they're looking toward doing a residential development, and that may be one of the reasons that some folks are interested in having a moratorium is because
Could
it
be.
Would affect them among and also their neighbors to the north. But then on the other hand, I guess what I'm trying to say is when I look at those two particular properties, I don't foresee those being properties where there's going to be something other than residential development. Those are not the big opportunities in terms of some commercial development at the north end of town. They're real physically constrained properties, and they don't have great road access. So anyway, so I kind of go back and forth. What's our next step on this? I mean, one thing I think we're all clear that we want to hear some more detail on like a six-month process, and we'd love
right.
if you
would
bring
you like
them back.
Just based on the input that we've got
right
now and
yep.
email us,
yep.
and we'll get together and hammer something out. Toot sweet. How fast do you guys want it?
I don't know. But I guess the thing is that if we were going to move down the road of a six-month moratorium and wanted to try to have a public hearing in January about that, we
yeah.
would kind of have to decide that right now.
Right.
And even so, it might be February.
Right.
And I feel like I'm not quite there personally. Not
well,
quite
ready
to say that.
To have a public hearing? I mean, please.
I don't really object if y'all think it's the right thing to do.
No, well, throwing this thing together isn't predicated on a moratorium or not. How about if we put this together
right.
and
yeah.
then
that
we can
right.
see what people's comfort level is. I personally, again, I think the moratorium is the right device to use. I would also agree that it should be limited to 6 months. I'm not going to jump off a bridge if
I can support a public hearing, but that by no means means that I would then support the moratorium. It simply means I'm willing to hear what folks have to say about it. That's fair.
I guess that's kind of where I am, too.
Steve looks like he's got heartburn.
Not really heartburn, but just reminders. We start talking about dates. In order to have the public hearing, there needs to be an ordinance drafted that lays out exactly what it is.
Yeah, that would be tough to do.
We're going to do, and that would be, to do what I hear you all saying, would be pretty difficult to do in January.
What? Well, you'd have to draft, the ordinance would have to really be drafted, around the time the public hearing was set, just so we could send it to Orange County 30 days prior to the hearing.
Right.
So it would have to be sent. Realistically,
February is really
the procedural things that have to happen.
But correct me if I'm wrong, the only things that have to be enumerated in the ordinance are the length of time of the moratorium and then the questions to be addressed within that span of time, right?
Well, in the plan for how we're, timeline for how we're going to get there.
Okay. And that's what you need to...
Why don't we see what you let's do, and then, if there's something that we may have a minute to discuss.
Okay, we'll fi-slam a clunker through it. How about that?
Well put. Are we done with this topic for the moment?
I hope so.
Should we have an idea when we're coming back to it?
How many more meetings do we have this year? We only have
two more?
We have two more regular meetings and one public hearing night. We have the meeting on the 21st, regular meeting, the 28th, public hearing night, and December 5th. And that's it until January the 9th.
December 5th is the last meeting.
So we got two more regular meetings. What were the dates?
November 21st and December 5th.
Why don't we see if we can throw something together for December the 5th?
Does that suit your calendar, Steve, or your calendar of items?
We'll stay as long as you all will.
Great thing to say.
Weirder things could happen. We could throw something together, and everybody could look at it and go, "It's okay to me. I'll take two."
Okay.
I've heard of towns where that happens.
Where?
We're not.
I don't know, it was a Star Trek episode or an alternative universe or something.
Maybe so. All right. So that's how we're going to proceed. Then we'll pick up this topic for December 5th and presumably make a decision about whether we're going to move forward with having a public hearing about a moratorium at that point as well. And then final item on our agenda is request to appoint a Board of Aldermen Retreat Planning Committee and confirm retreat dates. Joel said she'd be interested in doing that, and I'd heard from Dan, and I actually would like to be involved in that process as well. That's three of us.
I move that Dan, Joel, and Mark constitute our retreat committee.
Thank you. Got it.
Let me just tell y'all my availability. It's really difficult. In the daytime. No, I'm just telling you.
In the daytime.
In the daytime, weekdays, unless we meet first thing in the morning or last thing, so I can schedule things. Saturday mornings are good for me now because soccer ends on Saturday.
Should we pass it?
We'll move those three folks.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Those are the times I'm afraid.
I would like to ask, is it true that, is Homestead Center all that's available that weekend?
I'm sure there are other things that are available, but, we have limited choices if we're going to do it in Carborough.
The Century Center is not available and Owasso is not available.
Well, we try to listen to you all. Century Center now, we'd use what's now the library. There's really not a real good space at the Century Center. We didn't get that glowing remarks from the last two at Owasso.
I didn't have a problem with Owasso.
I find the Homestead Center to be, it's just uncomfortable. Because it has, folding chairs, and it's all hard.
I mean, we can look at Owosso.
We'll have our committee look into this matter further, but yeah, I think maybe Owosso sounds like a better
Southern
Human
Services.
Oh, in trouble.
Well, I didn't want to go there.
We can't have no Latina Hill. Now I'm just trying to vote against that. I'm just as a matter of policy. And I just have to confess to y'all, I was at a church program on Saturday and somebody said Chapel Hill, and I said, you are in Carver.
Just while we've got everybody together, would you all mind if we suggested a few dates and times for you all, I don't mean now, but for the retreat committee, because we normally would involve several staff folks and the facilitator and trying to coordinate all those.
Is that the 25th and 26th?
28th and 29th.
Yeah.
No, he's talking about the planning.
I'm talking about the dates for the committee to meet.
Okay.
All right. Well, email her first.
Email me first.
I don't want to get up unless you're adjourned.
Did anybody have any objection to my suggestion of extending, or at least having a resolution to consider extending the terms of the people that we just appointed in September? Did you get my email about that? Everybody.
I'm fine.
There wouldn't be a we appointed somebody to the Arts Committee and one or two others that their term, we appointed them last month and their term expires in January.
Good idea.
So can we just give them another 3 years or whatever the.
If that's what they want. Move to adjourn.
All right, we'll bring a resolution on that.
All right, that's fine.
It's been moved and seconded that we adjourn. All those in favor,
signify by
saying aye.
Yeah, that's right.